Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
You're listening to Power Athlete Radio, a podcast dedicated to empowering your performance every damn day. Join former NFL pro and Power Athlete founder John Wellborn as he dissects the greatest minds in strength, conditioning, and more. Joining him is everyone's favorite coach and hair model, Chris, aka Tex McQuilkin, Power Athlete's Director of Performance. So whether your goal is to be the hammer, destroy mediocrity, or simply move the dirt, you've come to the right place. Now with the warm-up done, let the gains begin.
Yeah. Power Athlete Nation, welcome to another episode of the premier podcast in strength and conditioning. I'm sitting here with John Wellborn.
Wow, you took it old school.
Power Athlete founder and CEO and 10-year NFL player. 9-year starter.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yes, and the friend of the podcast is joined by another friend of the podcast, Officer Colin Jackson. Welcome to town, my friend.
Long time listener, one time caller.
He did call.
First time in person.
First time in person.
Yeah. Colin and I, we are college teammates. So been going strong, friends forever. 18 years just beating each other up, hanging out and holding each other accountable for nonsense. Yeah, man. Welcome to town. You're in town for Jeff Gonzalez's Concealed Carry Course 2.
Yeah, so it's the more sequel. Advanced version. Yeah, it's the more advanced version, which is perfect because that's what we like to do with Chris, is throw him into deep waters.
Yes, exactly. Oh, yeah, like I start with
Chris is like, I have a gun. I don't know if it works, but I assume it does.
What is a holster? Is a holster where you just tuck it in the back of your jeans?
Like, well, I told him I have a whole bag full of holsters that we'll bring because I'm sure you do too. Yep. We have this like, it's this purgatory of holsters where you get one, you're like, oh, this is great. And then it sucks and it goes into the bag. What I do is I bring the bag and then let people select.
Well, here's what Jeff's in for. I'm going tank top, no belt, jeans, tank top tucked in, and just I'm not concealing my carry. I'm just carrying.
That's Big Trouble in Little China.
Exactly.
That's exactly. Boot knife.
I will tuck my jeans into my boots and put another gun in the boots.
You know what's aggressive is the fact that when you just take the pistol and tuck it into the front of the pants, like appendix carry with no appendix holster.
Well, so. Yeah, I want to explore some demands of being a police officer. And we can explore training within that, both general preparation, barbell, all the good stuff, because you are a grindstone athlete. Yeah, and then the specific skill work, like y'all were talking about, BJJ, so a lot of that.
I was going to ask you on the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I can see I come from more of a fight boxing background, whereas I don't really think you guys are ever in a time where you're fucking one-on-one street fighting dudes.
They're really not.
But whereas I see in the jits, like the idea of being able to get underhooks and get dudes into control, and like if like you take a dude to the ground. I heard John Donahue, Danahue, who's a shaved head dude that works with Gordon Ryan. He made an interesting point where he was talking about like why the ground was important. Because, you know, obviously when you're on your feet, you can generate a ton of force. So like he, in his analogy, which was kind of a crazy fucking analogy, but he was talking about like throwing the javelin, like you can generate all this force off your feet throwing the javelin, but if you ask somebody to throw from their knees, it's not going to go far. So the idea of like getting somebody on the ground off their feet takes away most people's power to like generate a kick or explode or do anything. And most people aren't dynamic enough on the ground. So it's like a great way of like getting them off their ground into a bad place and then using the ground as like a fixed point against them. And I was like, man, that's as he was talking about it, obviously he was talking about the, you know, the strength of jiu-jitsu as a skill, but all I could think about is like a cop or a police officer in a defensive situation getting, the individual on the ground into a position that makes them vulnerable, and then using the ground as leverage against them. Like, it makes so much sense for that.
Yeah, and the more that I think about it, especially when doing arrests, if you have someone who's compliant and you can put them right in handcuffs, it's not an issue. But majority of the time when they are going bad, you're trying to find that, like you said, that leverage point or something to work against, whether it be a wall, a cruiser, something like that, so that you can kind of have them pinned, so then you can work on the solving those problems. Like, okay, can I get my cuffs now? Or do I just need to hang on to you until I get some more people back here? But it's incredible when I started doing it, and then you were getting on the ground and getting in these really uncomfortable positions, but then you were also getting like all those little kind of like moments of clarity of like, oh, it's so simple. It's so simple to, oh, just shift over here, shift your weight over here. This is how you can escape using putting your legs into it. I mean, the basic training that we get a lot of times, it's that cookie cutter bread and butter stuff. And you get to learn like the OOPA, right? Mm-hmm. So it's, oh, if someone's on top of you, grab, you know, trap an arm, trap a leg, roll over like that. And that's kind of where it ends, which sucks because...
That's not enough.
No, and you really need to understand how
and,
to...
And that's just enough to get you in trouble.
Yeah, it's like, because then you roll over, you're like, I got it, I'm out of here. And then it's like, well, now what do I do?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, but, and they're on PCP.
Well, that's a weird one too. Something I've really had to like... walk back and like marry is so like we're used to like a lot of like short explosive bursts mm-hmm. within the training, and like that's kind of the opposite for some of the jiu-jitsu stuff, the idea of like staying relaxed and kind of moving through these mm-hmm. movements and like, you know, being fluid and like only applying enough pressure to be able to keep them in position, but not too much that it like, you know, all of a sudden now, like, cause I did it last night. I was fucking applying way too much. And as I leaned forward, I had an underhook. I had the guy here. And as I leaned forward to try to put my shoulder into his face, fucking leveraged me and flipped me over. And I ended up like trapping my leg, and I just ended up in a really bad position really quick, where I was in a positive, the position you want to be in. And within a second, I was flipped into a fucking, the worst position to be on. Then the guy had me cross body, was pinning my fucking head and my legs, and then just got me into an arm bar. And I was like, fuck, like I thought I was doing everything right. And I mean, obviously these guys are skilled and you know, obviously the criminal, but I mean, even fucking bad guys get lucky mm-hmm. and you're in a bad position. He feels leverage. I mean, who knows? He might've wrestled when he was fucking in high school. And next thing you know, he throws his hips and puts you in a bad position and you're fucked. And, I think that's like the interesting thing, whereas, you know, there I'm in a bad position and I can feel what's coming and you're like tap out. Whereas in your guys' situation, there is no tap.
Yeah. And that's why it's the more like tools you can have in your tool belt, the better you're off, you know? So whether it be people may have done wrestling in high school or striking or different things, I think when we were talking about it earlier, the overall, the best benefit for policing is getting in that uncomfortable position. Right. And it's the closest thing you can really get to a street fight, because it's another person doing their best, putting their most effort into kind of, I guess the best way to put it is dominating you. Mm-hmm. Right. So not out to hurt each other, but it's, I'm going to beat you. Right. But in kind of a safe environment, it's the closest thing you're going to get to one of those actual street fights. So for me, it was when you could start getting under pressure and then understanding it's like, this is a bad situation. Okay. If this was really happening to me, what do I need to prioritize? Okay. Can I retain my weapon? Cool. How do I get out of this? Right. And that's what I've come to find, is that a lot of times it's going to be that a whole bunch of that chaos out in the street. And then if you can get to somewhat of a dominant position, be like, okay, what's base here? And then now you can control that tempo and you can slowly work. You can get the positions that you want. And especially whether it be side control or mount, and being able to retain that balance and that top pressure mm-hmm. is so critical.
Is it weird, like wearing your, I mean, obviously in the, you know, like within the, you know, fight space on, you know, in the gym, you know, you're barefoot, let's say you're wearing gi, no gi, whatever it looks like, but then all of a sudden you're in patrol. And as I was thinking, like, you know, as you're in full mount and you try to like hook your, you know, your heels in and kind of like, you know, get into a good hold position, the fact that you're wearing boots, you know, like I was thinking like that, you know, it's a little different when like all of a sudden, like I'm inside control and I'm trying to, you know, move here and then, you know, swing my leg over the top and get into a better position. And I'm like, what happens? I'm wearing pants and I got shit in my pockets, or I'm wearing boots and this, you know, like it just adds
utility belt,
a different layer to where you're just like, almost like put your knee into them and then kind of slice it through. And it's nice and easy because you're barefoot. Whereas opposed from now, I got all this shit on me.
Yeah. It's never that good. And especially if you're having like an outer carrier, but then that also goes into kind of how you can start to obsess about like your gear setup, right? Is if I have to take off running after someone, is all my stuff falling off of me? So if you can kind of have that pretty tight, you're good. And then when I was doing detective work, we had a call where a guy had assaulted a bunch of people on PCP and had them calm down. So a lot of times with the folks on PCP, they can be one extreme or the other. Mm-hmm. And so it's just like, hey, man, just put your hands behind your back. So had him turn around, had his hands gripped, and almost like it was a scenario in the academy. As soon as I go to put the handcuffs on, it's like turns and flails. So we're able to take him down, and he ends up on his back, and he's kind of kicking his feet up at me. And normally in the past, I'd be like, oh, I'm just going to struggle with you here. But having done jiu-jitsu, I was like, oh, sweep these legs out of the way, get into a side control.
Sure.
And then the other guy that I was with, then we just started communicating. He's like, do you know where my cuffs went? Yeah. Oh, they're over here. Cool. Let's grab those up. Okay, on three. Going to leverage his arm up, get him into kind of, I think it's kind of like a mount position from there, and then we'll get the cuffs on him. So before we could even get anybody else with him, we talked it out, communicated, kind of going back to the communicating aspect of it, and solved the problem. Mm-hmm. But I would definitely say having like experienced jiu-jitsu and experienced those different times on the mat with it, I was like, okay, this isn't great right now, but we can work through this. Here's the problem now. Let's solve that problem.
This is also because I'm a fucking psycho. But as I'm in these positions, like I was telling you about that big dude I was rolling with, because he's real big, he's not as mobile kind of side to side. So I was actually able to hipscape and kind of like shoot myself over and basically jump over the top and get on his back, which at one point he just fucking buckled into a turtle and I didn't know what else to do. But like my first inclination was I'm going to pepper his fucking ribs. I'm going to bust his ribs from the back and that'll open him up. And then I was like, oh fuck, we're not supposed to do that. So I didn't do that because I was fucking ended poorly. But like in that situation, because you're, you know, I mean, obviously we are in the confines of fighting, but now all of a sudden you're in a situation where like a dude could bite you.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, like, hey, you know, I'm in this side control and I'm trying to trap his arm and the dude lunges forward and tries to bite, or the fact that like, you know, he got free arm is flailing or he pokes you in the eye. And so like, you're getting into these situations where you're like trying to control the arms, stay away from the head control, but then this guy turns and fucking bites me. Like if I get bit, I'm going to fucking kill you or I'm going to open your eyes up, you know, like, so like there's this weird thing where you're like, man, there's so many weird things that like, as you're in here, like, you know, like last night the dude got in his fucking hip was on my face and I'm like, if this was a defensive fight, like you could fucking lay a bite on this dude. And I don't know if you've ever been bit, but it's fucking awful.
No,
I mean, no
bites, no spit in the face.
I'm probably just going to like tap out and go right to the hospital at that point, you know, when people are biting you. But like, that's what crazy people do.
But it's this, you have to manage that. Yeah. Right. And then especially that's where learning how to kind of cross face with like a kind of a forearm right across the face to direct that where you want to go. And it was funny talking about learning like the OOPA in the academy. It's like, oh, when you're doing it, make sure you grab up real tight to that person so they can't punch you. Like, that makes a lot of sense. So then when I go to my first jiu-jitsu class, I'm like, ah,
oh, I got this.
And rolling us a purple belt, and he was a nice guy kind of doing the intro because it's better to roll with them than another white belt. And I go up and he's like, what are you doing? I was just like, I got to keep my head close. He's like, let go of me before I choke you unconscious. And it's like, okay, thanks. Yeah. He's like, forget that stuff. Like, you need to learn it, you know? And so... But it's interesting the differences between that. And then he also did a lot of MMA. So he'd be like, sure, I understand where you're coming from. Like, yeah, if I was in that situation and I'm in the cage, I don't want to get, you know, a whole bunch of haymakers rained down on me. So it's getting into those kind of different scenarios and saying, okay, what's good? What's bad here? Where do I want to go from here? What's my goal? What's the problem that I need to solve? But yeah, the biting, it's just...
I don't know why like that keeps going through my head. I'm like, God, I'm in this situation. I'm like, this dude could bite me right now. And then the problem is if he bit me, I'd probably just fucking knee drop his face. But then you're in a situation where now all of a sudden it's like, can't use chokeholds. There's like, you know, this excessive violence. The minute anything happens, everybody pulls a fucking cell phone camera out and they think that they're all going to get their next viral video. And then some dude fucking bites you, you drop a knee and they're like, look at him. He just assaulted that dude and fucking this. And you're like, this fucking guy bit me.
Yeah.
And I don't know how the rest of the world works, but if you get into a fight and you start biting, you deserve what you get.
Yeah, but I know for us, with a lot of that coming into it, as I started going through and once I got my blue belt, I was like, well, I really shouldn't be trying to do like rear nakeds or anything like that. So I started to kind of try and guide a game and was like, okay, I like pressure, like the pressure passing, the mm-hmm. pressure game, and that also translates really well to work. And then my friend of mine who's a black belt is just, Kimura is his game.
Yeah.
And it's also probably one of the, like, the most useful grips for policing, especially like getting arms out, especially if you have someone in the turtle, you just reach in kind of with that under the hand. And
well, the problem with the Kimura, and this is at least what I did, like if I feel you get to it, like I don't need you to put me into the position where all of a sudden
just tap early.
Yeah. So like if we've gotten to that point, I've fucked up and I know I've fucked up. And like, as you feel them getting into it, I'm like, like I won't even let them get there. Cause I'm like, like there's no way for me to get out of this. At least at my skill level, like maybe if you're fucking some, you know, fucking
you can like roll ninth level
wizard.
It,
oh yeah. I see these dudes.
Yeah. It gets. No, I'm with you there. It's like, I'm not getting paid for this.
No, so. And I'm trying to fight another day and I don't need to rip my shoulder into pieces. Yep. So it's already, that's already happened in the NFL.
And a opportunity to also get comfortable being uncomfortable is the weight room. Mm. Almost an introduction to this sense and fight against an object that's not fighting back.
Yeah, I what's really interesting is like a lot of like the things that we use within the weight training, the idea of like I'm going to keep like a good hollow position, good dead bug position, you know, bracing and trying to do this, like that it becomes so important in terms of being able to generate force. But then there's also the other side of it where like you're trying to relax a little bit. And the problem is I have no fucking chill in me, as you know, because we've, you know, sprinted, run, and we do everything at such a high deal that it was funny as we were going through stuff. Shandy was like rolled up and he's like, how do you spell your name? What's 4+4? And the same shit that we were hitting them on the assault, the guys on the assault bike.
Right. So what John's speaking of is an opportunity to connect this back to Collins. Decision making is under stress. Yeah. We hit our athletes, we hammer them with conditioning and have them spell their name or manhandle John pretty easily. But this also gets to police work because I got to sprint my ass after this perp.
Yeah.
I got to take them down. We got to fight a little bit, but then I need to keep my cool.
Yeah.
So Colin, speak to that. And then, I mean, the opportunity, if you're training someone, noob, green, how do you introduce now stress and can compound this decision-making development that you've spent how long have you been a cop? 13 years developing.
Well, just to piggyback off what Chris said, like, probably the only way is like we were talking with shooting, like you have to be able to go shoot or you have to put yourself in these situations. I mean, you've taken the forefront to be like, hey, I'm going to go humble myself and do this. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you help shepherd people along to making that good decision?
A lot of it comes down to talking through things. And especially if you have like a rookie with you in training, I'll always be like, we just got shot. Where are we? You know, and it's inconsequential, but it's helping them learn where they are in the city. Where are we going? Like, what's going on? Like, how are you going to call out on the radio? What are you going to say at this point? Because you're now, it's funny that a lot of the little things that you kind of take for granted, having done them so long, when they're new, it's like, this is a mountain I need to climb.
Yeah.
So, but how can you do that with giving them just the right amount of stress so that you're not overwhelming them, but that when the time comes for the real stress, they're falling back on, you know, kind of the good habits that they're developing. Hmm. So, just like the little, you know, getting them with that, like, we just got shot, where are we going? And then, you know, a lot of brief, like kind of breaking stuff, like, why were you standing that way? Why were you over here?
Were they aware of their foot position?
Yeah. Exactly. So
well,
kind
what
of,
about like, know, like escalation of force? I always think that's an interesting one. Like, if this guy's a 2, am I a 3? You know, because I've run into cops that like, if somebody's a 1, they're always a 10. And like the amount of times I've encountered police where like there should be like the escalation far outseated like what was happening. I'm like, hold on, we just went here. Like, what the fuck is wrong with this guy?
Yeah, sir, so, and ma'am, and just being a normal human being goes a very long way. And so I was able to get into, we're working on stepping up a crisis negotiator unit, so I was able to go to a school for that, which was awesome. And a lot of it talking about active listening and just how you can apply that not only for policing, but even in day-to-day life. But so much of that is, I think a lot of it is fear. So this may be the 1,000th stop that I've done or something along those lines. It's routine for me. But this may be the first time you are ever stopped by the police. So how I interact with you is going to forever mark how you feel about the police. So if I can come, hey, sir, ma'am, how are you doing today? The reason why I stopped you is this. Is there any particular reason why that happened today? No? Okay, cool. Get your license, registration, proof of insurance. Good to go from there. But then, like you said, you'll have those guys that just take it all out on folks. Like, yeah. Why are you doing this on my highway? And it's like, whoa, you know.
So my daughter.
We're not here to be bullies, you know.
So my daughter asked me the other day, we were driving home, and she asked me, what was the first time I ever got pulled over by a police officer? And I was like, I had my license about a week and a half, and my brother took the car that I was driving. And so I had to drive his, he had a Jeep, like a 78 CJ5 Golden Eagle, three speed convertible. So it was cold. He takes my truck and I had to go to some study thing. So I took his truck, which was pretty cool. I'm like 16 driving this fucking convertible Jeep. And so on the way home, I drove by the beach. And of course, you know, the police are always hanging, you know, hanging out at the beach and trying to get people for, I don't know, doing whatever the fuck they do at the beach. And so this cop fucking comes in and pulls me over. And I'd had my license 2 weeks and I'm driving my brother's car. Like, I'm nervous as fuck. Like, I'm so scared. Like, I knew I had my license, but I knew that, you know, I'm thinking I don't have his insurance card. His registration's probably somewhere in the glove compartment, but who fucking knows? And like, the cop gets out and was such a fucking asshole and ended up calling my parents on the phone to ask if I had stolen the car. I mean, like, such a fucking dick knob. And I was so scared. And then, like, basically told my parents that he pulled me over for playing loud music, which was funny because my brother's fucking stereo didn't work. And, like, just, like, I got home. Like, my parents were so fucking mad at me. My older brother's like, what the fuck? I'm like, this could have been solved. And he pulled me. I wasn't speeding. And just fucking pulled me over to harass me. And I'm just like, well, this is how cops are going to roll.
And that is, I had a, when I first came out, one of my FTOs was just like, you know, do you want to come out here and do police work? Or do you want to come out here and be a bully? And you can, there's really those two types. You know, there's a lot of guys that are out there head down doing the work day in, day out. And 90% of those guys aren't that type of cop where it's, they're out there and they know what they're doing. They know what they want to do. But a lot of times it is kind of that complex. And I think a lot of it is a lot of folks tend to turn that into their identity. So it's, you know, look at that, the thin blue line. I'm the Punisher. I hope you enjoy that blanket of protection
look,
that you
look at the sticker on the back of my F-250.
Right. And so they take it as like a personal affront. And I mean, that talking to rookies and new people, that's one of the biggest things that I tell them is you have to find something to do outside of this job because it's going to keep on rolling. It's going to keep on grinding when you may be God's gift to policing, but when you leave, it's not going to care.
Sure.
No one's going to care. It's going to keep rolling. So kind of going back into that, like training in the gym, training jujitsu, something that's going to, what I call is like get the mind scrub. If you've just had one of those weeks, there's absolutely nothing better than jujitsu because it's one of those activities where nothing matters except for that. How am I going to get out of this? I'm getting smashed inside control. This is terrible. How can I get out of this?
Yeah, I fucking hate it.
Yeah. Or
every day,
you know, I've got the classic 5 rep max deadlift. Nothing else matters. Saddle up for that. Give it a ride.
Show off to the high schoolers in the gym.
What's up, boys?
Dude, I really like lifting weights. I will go to jiu-jitsu because we've committed to doing it. But at the end of the day, I really like lifting weights and throwing things.
It's crazy that there isn't a big crossover, if you will. Like it's. I don't know if anybody's hitting you with like the, oh, you're very strong. As the like kind of this subtle.
Well, I don't get to roll with like the normal people. I only get like the bigger like colored belts. But I think there is a level when you're pretty big and strong, like what I call is like a master of fuck you. Mm-hmm. Like you might know jujitsu, but I know fuck you. So which means it nullifies your skinny small jujitsu stuff. Because at the end of the day, like you might try to get me in something, and then I'm just gonna pick you up and fucking slam you.
But there's nothing worse than when you get that 135, 155 pound, 5'6" dude, purple belt that just puts every ounce of their weight on you. And you're like, how are you doing this? I can't get out of this. It's, and that for me is when you really see that properly executed technique and understand what it's really capable of. It's
I rolled with Shandy and he's like 200 pounds. I mean, fucking 11 time world champ. And, it just made me feel stupid. And then the other weird thing is we lifted weights at those guys, so I know how strong they are.
Yeah.
And the strength is disproportionate
at the moment.
At the moment, no. I know, but like, you're like, I would have thought you all benched 500 pounds.
Yeah.
And so then I realized fairly early on that there's like some very intrinsic training stuff. Like they understand joint angles and they understand efficiency and movement, and like it doesn't stop and there's a flow. I mean, it's really fascinating. It's so I constantly, and we, Chris and I have talked about this for years, the idea of athletic problem solving. Mm-hmm. I think like there's, you know, whenever you read the research, it talks about, you know, lifting weights is incredible for gray brain matter and exercise. I think part of staying young and developing that brain function is constantly forcing yourself to athletic problem solve. You know, like, can I scale this fence? Can I do this? And then actually executing it. And you see people as they age, they lose athletic problem solving. Like, yeah. Like they can't like get off the ground in this. And so I think something that's fascinating with jiu-jitsu, same as lifting weights and training, especially finding new movements. Like we were looking at like trying to create greater ankle rigidity. So we were looking at like the Polish boxes and mm-hmm. the angles and some of the other things. But like that changing the different environment and forcing you to make decisions in different planes of motion and different situations, I think keeps you neurologically young.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's cool is we had Stephen Kotler on and he spoke to the research about flow state and where we can connect it, even clearing the mind, skill development, anti-aging, but it comes down to the value of movement and then learning new skills.
Yep.
We speak to this in the athleticism model with the competency.
Yep.
And then like we can see how an athlete moves or introduce them to a new skill and how easy it is to them or not easy, and find where they lie on their timeline of athleticism, which is awesome.
Yep.
And it's cool to give these guys these new movements, and then we're seeing them improve them. And I know you're hands-on with manual resistance, so you can feel the efficiency increase and the fight and the turn on, like the literal turn on of the athletes in their resistance, which is cool.
Well, I wrote
which is similar to jiu-jitsu, I imagine, but we're just taking it one step back to like general movement.
Well, the years ago, I wrote a blog post called "Always Be a White Belt." The idea of like constantly taking on new tasks and mastering them, and like it's okay to not suck at things. And I wrote this blog post because I really believe in it. And then all of a sudden, this is when I was faced. Like now I'm legitimately a white belt getting fucking smashed every day. And I have this like constant fucking like one devil on one shoulder and one fucking, you know, angel on one side, where it's like, this is so good. And, you know, athletic problem solving, and it's amazing, you know, like this like good fucking version of somebody on my shoulder. And then I have like the other version of me with eye black that's like, fuck these people. Fucking smash them. Like, don't fucking submit.
Sweep the leg.
Oh, yeah, totally. Like, you know, like any of the, like whenever we're on our feet and doing any of like the judo stuff, that's my fucking wheelhouse.
I would have to assume.
Yeah.
Fighting for grips.
And like foot position.
I don't
want
to go against you on that.
Yeah, but like fighting for position and trying to get footwork. People. Yeah, no, that's my wheelhouse. And so like those guys are like this, like leg sweeps. And like to the point where like you're kicking their leg as they lift it and then trying to like, you know. Yeah. And then even like a dude will try to get the underhooks underneath you. And I'm like, eh, this ain't happening. So like that type of stuff is like, you know, I got like the one guy with the eye black that's like, fucking finish them. And then it's like, no, you're here to learn. Be a white belt. These are your friends.
Teabag
them. You know, like they're all so nice. Don't be like this. And then it's like fucking break their neck. Like, so I have this good versus evil constant battle going on in my head. And then the problem is that dude chokes you out and he's like, dude, you did great. And he like wants to high five you and give you a hug. And I'm like, God, if only these people weren't so fucking nice.
The duality of man, John.
Well, it's
that's what's so crazy. Everybody's so, and they will smash the life out of you and be like, you probably shouldn't have put your hand there.
Yeah. Like, and then after everybody hugs, like this is what's funny too, because
it's like Fight Club in real life.
Tex and I, like I wasn't raised with a lot of hugs, as you can figure. Like I wasn't hugged a lot as a kid. And I know Tex probably didn't get a lot of hugs either.
No. Yeah, Colin was there when my first initiation to human contact.
Chris had never been hugged until he came to college and you guys had a few drinks. You're like, then, get over here, think for the real thing.
Yeah, and then Pat and I raised you.
Yeah.
So what's hilarious is the Brazilians are big huggers. I saw Luis, who was one of the young kids that came and trained with us yesterday, and he sees me. He's like, oh, John, and he comes over, gives me a big hug. I was like, oh, it's great to see you. I just saw you a few hours ago. And then as he's leaving, he like walks across and like another, and I'm like, just we've hugged three times today. Like four, actually four
you
times.
Think it's a hug. He's just practicing getting underhooks.
Oh, he's sizing he's you just up.
Oh, hey, John, how are you doing? You're really strong today.
But it's funny. There's a lot of hugs, and I realize that like they it's very different. And so like you can't be mad at any of these people because everybody's so friendly in this.
Yeah. But there's a lot of unwritten. It reminds me a lot of surfing. There's a lot of very unwritten rules that if you mess it up. Like someone will place it and be like, hey, man, don't do that, you know, or they'll call on the mat enforcer.
This episode of Power Athlete Radio is powered by Train Heroic, the most immersive strength training app experience on the market.
We've built our online training business by partnering with Train Heroic and helping us deliver all of our world-class training programs like Jack Street, Field Strong, and Grindstone. To learn which Power Athlete training program best suits your goals, head to powerathletehq.com/training.
And if you're a coach looking to build a business with the best tech and training, go to trainheroic.co/powerathletehq. And now back to the show.
So,
1984.
The program.
I thought that was just face. I didn't realize. Are you going for a reach there?
Is
that a
reach face paint an homage to fucking Johnny Lawrence?
That's what I'm saying right now.
Oh, so your hot take.
That's not a hot take. When I published our podcast, someone informed and then shared the photo. So it's their hot take.
That's a stretch. I mean,
I don't know. I credit Latimer.
I thought it was just the skulls. I do love Latimer. That is the best, like the best scene ever. The place at the table, and he just goes around.
Well, my favorite is the Southern accent on the coach.
Was that what college was like in the early 90s?
No, I wasn't at all. Just
that's
like
that's not a documentary?
Just like when I saw...
You went to Berkeley, though. So
yeah, it didn't happen. Just like when I got to see Any Given Sunday, I was like, what team is this? They got fucking strippers at practice, and they're cutting cars in half? I didn't get that.
It's like training.
Well, yeah.
It's like, oh my God.
It's like, I'm going to have to smoke PCP on my first day?
Is this going to be like Colors? Like Pac-Man?
Colors.
Emma Knight.
Robert Duvall.
Man walking. Fuck, that's the best movie.
So where were we?
Okay. So he asked me an interesting point where he thought that if any of my NFL offensive line training translated into skills within jiu-jitsu, and I said no. The only translation of skill came from when we do the judo, from like when we're on our feet with the tussles and trying to get into that stuff, the ability to be able to play in space and move people and throws and all that. Like that's my fucking wheelhouse. The minute we lay on the ground, all my power goes away.
Yeah, because I would have thought with a lot of the kind of the arm work and he's talking about using that for direction that when you're on, especially on your back and in side control and you're trying to build frames out, which essentially is using that to build space, I'd have thought that would have translated more. But I guess thinking more on it, you're not really using your hands much.
And I'd never ended up on my back. Yeah. Like I've told you, if I end up on the ground with a dude on top of me, everything has gone fucking wrong and I'm probably not going to have a job tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
So like the idea of like being on the ground, a dude on top of you. Now, there were many times where I drove a dude to the ground and then I would fucking smash him and then bounce right up and get on my feet because I didn't want to lay on the ground. We had a rule in the NFL, the dudes that play on the ground don't fucking play. And so I was telling him actually.
Yeah, brought that into Power Athlete with the athletic burpees.
Yeah. But like the idea of me laying on my back with somebody on top of me gives me a little bit of anxiety. And I have this like strange feeling of like, it's hilarious. All the imagery and all the branding for Power Athlete goes through my head. Like empty your cup. It's not about you, you fucking asshole. Move the dirt. You know, like, I'm like, this is a process. The only way I'm not going to get better at this is if I stop showing up. Be a white belt, be humble. Like all the shit that we've written about, I have to like mentally tell myself, because we have this fucking little ego where I'm like, fuck, man, I know that I can smash this dude, but like, that's not why I'm here. I'm here to learn a skill. And I know that it takes a certain amount of exposure and opportunity. It's like lifting weights. Like, yeah, I want to be strong. Well, you got to go through the process. You got to go underneath the bar. There's a certain amount of reps, tonnage, load, opportunity you have to do to get to a certain place. And there's no way to circumvent the time. I mean, there's no way to like plug in. And I constantly think as I'm driving home, if only this was the fucking Matrix. And you remember we plugged it in and he's like, I know jiu-jitsu? Like how great it would be
I'm out on that.
Fucking, dude, if you could just plug the fucking zip drive in and download and I could.
We actually had this conversation on the podcast with Jim Carizzi, throwback, that the Matrix has like screwed a generation
yeah.
of hard work because of the plug-in versus the Karate Kid and the process that he went
off,
through.
Wax off. I know. But how much more fun would it be if you could just walk in, get downloaded, and then just go fucking like rumble in the jungle?
This is what cops talk
like,
about on their downtime? Just stupid shit?
Pretty much. That, a lot of hypotheticals.
I'm just more interested in the fact that that Thor was able to forge his hammer in the eye of a dying star. I mean, that was by far the coolest part of that documentary.
I'm not in on comics.
I do like the Marvel movies.
CGI characters. Except for the, you know, forces of nature.
Do you think that they've CGI'd up Chris Hemsworth?
Oh, no, he had some additionals. As Nick Hardwick would say, additionals.
Broccoli, chicken breast,
yes,
creatine,
yes, and,
8 hours of sleep.
Lots of cardio.
Body weight exercises on his app.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what does it.
Yeah, everybody knows that. It's
2 hours of sunlight, you're good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're fine.
I mean, he's got good genes. All his brothers are killing it in Hollywood.
Yeah, well, relatively theory.
Right.
I was going to say, in terms of police work, like we're going to have fun at the shooting course. I'm pretty stoked on that, especially seeing Chris. Like, I want to see Chris, like, show up in, like, kind of like a leisure suit.
I also have a blowout kit just in case, you know.
I'm wearing my 80s leisure suit on Sunday.
Perfect.
It's basically Halloween.
Yeah.
Jeff is going to hate me.
No, Jeff is weird enough that he might even show up in something strange. Who knows? But the question I have is, if in police work, obviously, if you'd be proficient with, maybe it's probably more beneficial to be proficient with your hands in terms of jiu-jitsu and fight stuff than a weapon, but you still have to be proficient with weapons.
I would say overall basic health is probably the number one issue that a lot of cops deal with.
Is it diet? Is it sleep?
I would say it's a lot of that, but I mean, even when I first started where you were just, you Chipotle every day. Uh-huh. You know, because you do one of meal prep. You know,
there could be worse things than eating that a bunch of Chipotle.
I've seen him consume it. It's getting a bag of Lay's at 7-Eleven.
Yeah.
Going up to the cheese machine, opening said bag.
Because they don't say that chili and cheese is just for hot dogs.
This is real. This is real.
You got to understand this.
I just threw up in my mouth.
And you make your own little in-bag nachos.
It's like a Frito pie, but 7-Eleven. This is disgusting.
You put the chili and cheese in, a little tomatoes. Poor sleep, a lot of just poor health habits overall.
Obviously, like they probably have you guys shoot every so often, mm-hmm. but like how many of the guys actually do some form of fight prep, some form of fight training?
Very few.
Really? Like no boxing, no nothing?
There's one guy in my department who did a few cage fights, but very proficient jiu-jitsu. We got a couple black belts. Oh, I got one black belt, and then a couple other guys that like every now and then we'll get together and roll, and then I think a couple dudes who were wrestlers back in the day. So maybe 5% of the department.
Wow.
Yeah.
Even though it's probably a skill that probably benefits you more than
anything. I will say we are trending upward. We did do a control taxes class in addition to our normal in-service this year, and a lot of that was going over kind of a lot of the principles of jiu-jitsu, but more than just the UPA. But okay, hey, side control, how to get an arm out from underneath, and just kind of working that principle. So at least we're trending in that situation, but it's such a double-edged sword. And when you look from the administrator's perspective, is we want to get these guys training, but if I send these folks to training and I'm losing 25% from each class to injuries, and now I don't have enough people to put on the street, is it worth it? Mm. And that's kind of what stinks, you know. So it's a lot of guys will go out on their own, and especially if you see the benefit in a lot of these things, it's, you know, I mean, I enjoy being in the gym. I enjoy doing the jiu-jitsu, shooting, you know, so to come down here to do that, more than excited for it. But
is there a gym on campus?
But a lot of them are like hotel type gyms where you have the more of a Smith
yoga mats and
more of a Smith machine type squat rack, if you will. And then like dumbbells going up to maybe 50, if that. So, but it's better than nothing. So we'll give it that. Yeah.
First time I ever went to a hotel gym like that with Chris. First time I've ever seen this. He actually got in the Smith machine, laid on his back, and was doing vertical leg presses. That's my McQuilkin standard.
That's how you build the glutes.
And they had one plate.
So basically doing one plate on each side. Yeah. So I had John just sit on the bar.
Yeah, just lay on top
of it. So we leg pressed each other.
And then we just got like more and more people. We found like two or three small children, maybe some like extra, you know,
and just donkey calf raises for the rest of the time.
Perfect. So, I mean, if you really got to, you got to make it work.
Yeah. And that's what I think a lot of it comes down to is it's like the horse to water, you know, because they could offer a million trainings. They could offer top tier gym. But if you don't want to make yourself better, you're not going to make yourself better. Yeah. So...
How true is the wire?
The wire is probably one of the more accurate series, especially with the back end of it when you're doing like the search warrants and the wiretaps and a lot of the kind of the politics behind policing. And that was one of the things that was so shocking to me when I first became a cop. I thought, hey, we're all on the same team here. We're all trying to get the bad guys. And then you see different priorities, different places. And so
you've seen The Departed.
The DMV is interesting because it's like Maryland.
It's like The Departed.
District of Columbia and Virginia. So you got three different states governing bodies. So that's interesting.
But then it's also interesting how they have different priorities in different areas and the different crime rates in each area.
And you got to cover all of them.
Yeah. You get all three.
And we were speaking beforehand, the change in the training and I guess decriminalization of certain things. So people are missing reps in, I guess, how they're approaching people, how they're de-escalating situations. And sprinting after people, all that good stuff. So is that going to negatively affect potentially the future?
That's what I kind of see is if you're not being able to do those, like if you can't stop 5 to 6 people a day, and that might just be stopping and contacting them, just talking to them, so that now you're getting into those little micro decisions that you can make with each stop and how is it going to go and just getting used to talking to people who are strangers in that position. With so much stuff being decriminalized, a lot of people aren't making those stops. So you might go 2-3 days and not make a proactive stop. You might have to do some reports here or there, but that now you're missing out on all those little reps. So imagine if you just, hey, we're going to practice on Tuesday and then you're on the field on Sunday, right? You know, and so when you get those really heavy stress situations, you haven't had that inoculation building up. So it's definitely frustrating. It's definitely harder to kind of get the job done, but you know, you got to just kind of go with the flow and do what you can do. See what you can get done. But,
yeah.
I think it's definitely tough for a lot of folks coming out nowadays because you're just not getting those everyday reps.
Yeah. Cool. Everyday reps. I like
every day.
All right.
Well, we're going to get plenty to Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, we're going to have fun on Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, especially 1,000 rounds, I'll just say.
Yeah, ooh. Maybe if you guys will check, we'll probably post some stuff to social and probably take you on a journey. So, well, dude, thanks for stopping by and I look forward to it this weekend.
Glad to be here.
Awesome.
All right.
Bye.
Well, bye.
Bye.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.